Good evening. Italy gets an unwanted first place in the COVID-19 pandemic, the most deaths. Mayor de Blasio calls for a new deal to stop the virus. And is the virus a man-made terror? With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Thursday, March 19th, 2020. The death toll in Italy from the coronavirus overtook China's on Thursday as infections in the United States climbed past 10,000. Italy, with a population of 60 million, recorded at least 30,405 deaths, or roughly 150 more than in China, a country with a population over 20 times larger. Wuhan, the Chinese city where the coronavirus first emerged 3 months ago, recorded no new infections as the country successfully contained the scourge. At the United Nations in New York, meanwhile, Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the world is at war with a virus and warned that a global recession, perhaps of record dimensions, is near certainty. Guterres says the pandemic could kill millions worldwide. The recession was already evident in New York City, where subways at rush hour seem near deserted and the few people at the streets are seen wearing surgical masks and scurrying around to keep a social distance of 6 feet between each other. The U.S. death toll rose to 168, primarily elderly people. Johns Hopkins University, which has been tallying the virus's spread around the world, said the U.S. had more than 11,000 cases. Mayor Bill de Blasio called on President Donald Trump to move faster with assistance to the city as the numbers of sick skyrocketed from day to day. De Blasio invoked one of the biggest GOP losers of the past century to make his point.
Trump, right now, you are the Herbert Hoover of your generation. You are watching and waiting and missing every chance to be bold and to act to protect our nation. Herbert Hoover's successor, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, determined that our nation needed urgent and immediate action and created the New Deal and transformed the effort to help our people and saved our country, literally. President Trump is not doing that now for reasons that are absolutely inexplicable to the vast majority of us. But there's still time. Not much, but there's still time. The president yesterday invoked the Defense Production Act. I have no idea why the president waited until March 18th to invoke the Defense Production Act, which has been used repeatedly in recent decades. Seems to me, given what we knew about this crisis, given that the city of New York held its first press conference to announce our steps on coronavirus on January 24th, I think the president could have invoked the Defense Production Act in February or even January, but he's finally done it. However, the president has not ordered any of those subsequent actions. And this must change immediately. Through the Defense Production Act, the president can authorize the Department of Health and Human Services to order manufacturers to provide materials and services and to use their private facilities for manufacturing needed items. That has not happened. We have not seen the order from the president ensuring maximum 24/7 production of all items needed by our healthcare industry. And I would say it very plainly, every factory in America that can be converted to healthcare production, to the equipment and supplies that our valiant healthcare professionals need, and they will need even more in the coming months, every such factory should be ordered on a full production basis, on a level prioritized by the federal government. We are seeing an explosion in the number of cases here in New York City. Now, I will be clear that part of that is that we finally have more extensive testing going on. We have nowhere near the amount of testing that we should ideally have. We have nowhere near the amount of testing we should have had weeks and weeks ago to get ahead of this crisis. Nowhere near the amount of testing that a place like South Korea had, and they were able to use testing as a powerful part of a strategy to beat back the coronavirus. We're still far from where we should be, but we have a lot more testing than we used to have. And so it is natural that as you have more testing, you will see numbers grow simply because the larger reality is being captured more effectively. At this point, New York City, based on the 10 a.m. number, 3,615 confirmed cases of the coronavirus in New York City. Again, each of those a human being and a family represented. And that number has undoubtedly gone up since 10 a.m. It's a painful, distressing number. I also have to report another, even more painful number. There have been 22 deaths now in New York City directly related to coronavirus. The breakout by borough. In Queens, 980 cases. In Manhattan, 976 cases. In Brooklyn, 1,030 cases. In the Bronx, 463 cases. In Staten Island, 165 cases.
Meanwhile, Trump, when confronted today at a news conference about his hesitancy to pull the trigger on his declaration of national emergency, said it's not up to him.
Governors are supposed to be doing a lot of this work, and they are doing a lot of this work. The federal government's not supposed to be out there buying vast amounts of items and then shipping. You know, we're not a shipping clerk. The governors are supposed to be, as with testing, the governors are supposed to be doing it. We'll help out, and we'll help out wherever we can, and we can buy in volume, and in some cases, great volume, with the masks, as an example, which were really a problem. We have helped out, and there are right now millions of masks being made. But this is really for the local governments, governors, and people within the state, depending on the way they divide it up. And they'll do that, and they're doing a very good job of it. Where you have a problem with ventilators, we're working very hard trying to find nobody in their wildest dreams would have ever thought that we need tens of thousands of ventilators. This is something that's very unique to this, to what happened.
Under what conditions would you put the Defense Production Act into action?
Well, if we were desperately in need of something, and we frankly will know about that very shortly. We want to be ahead of, we don't want to do it as it happens, but before it happens, we're going to know a lot over the next two or three days. We'll know a lot.
For Dr. President.
At the same at the same news conference, the White House liaison on the virus, Dr. Deborah Birx, said that the government has made strides in providing crucial testing for coronavirus.
You can see the dramatic increases in the number of new cases based on our ability to test additional people. And this will continue over the next 2 to 3 days as we begin to have backlogs reduced of the testing. You all have heard the anecdotes of people waiting 5 or 6 days for their test results. We are moving through all of that as well as testing individuals. I really want to applaud the frontline healthcare workers, the nurses and the doctors and the testers that have really prioritized, and the American people who have prioritized those with symptoms. The number of test positives is increasing. That is a dramatically important signature that everybody is doing their job. Those with mild symptoms are staying home, self-isolating. Those with serious symptoms are coming forward to getting testing. Our test positive rates are now into the 10 to 11% range. That still means that 90% of the illnesses out there, even the severe ones, are not COVID-19. I know many of you are looking at the state level data. Still, over 50% of the cases come from 3 states. This is why we continue to prioritize testing in those states. In addition, 50% of the cases come from 10 counties. We're a very large country with very many counties, and I just want to applaud the local and state governments that are implementing their emergency operations centers and plans to ensure. I want to also really thank the healthcare workers that have been asked to reduce all elective surgeries, medical, and dental visits. This will dramatically increase the number of ventilators that are available in hospitals, but also in ambulatory surgical centers that can be converted and utilized, and also to the construction industry. We are deeply grateful the number, as Vice President said, the number of individuals have come forward with their construction masks, their booties, their Tyvek suits, and their masks to contribute them to the healthcare sector. The President's request to make this available in that legislation changes the ability and increases our availability immediately by in the 75 to 90% range because of the amount of construction use of those elements.
And Dr. Stephen Hahn, administrator of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, said scientists are advancing the search for new drugs to treat the coronavirus and is providing what he called off-the-shelf drugs that are already approved for use in humans, but for other purposes than coronavirus.
In the short term, we're looking at drugs that are already approved for other indications. So they're already approved, as the president said, for other diseases. As an example, many Americans have read studies and heard media reports about this drug chloroquine, which is an anti-malarial drug. It's already approved, as the president said, for the treatment of malaria as well as an arthritis condition. That's a drug that the president has directed us to take a closer look at as to whether an expanded use approach to that could be done to actually see if that benefits patients. And again, we want to do that in the setting of a clinical trial, a large pragmatic clinical trial, to actually gather that information and answer the question that needs to be answered and asked and answered. Let me give you another example. There's a cross-agency effort about something called convalescent plasma. This is a pretty exciting area. And again, this is something that we have given assistance to other countries with as this crisis has developed. So FDA's been working for some time on this. If you've been exposed to coronavirus and you're better, you don't have the virus in your blood, we could collect the blood. Now, this is a possible treatment. This is not a proven treatment. Just want to emphasize that. Collect the blood, concentrate that, and have the ability, once it's pathogen-free, that is virus-free, be able to give that to other patients, and the immunoglobulins, the immune response, could potentially provide a benefit to patients. It's another thing that we're looking at. Over the next couple weeks, we'll have more information that we're really pushing hard to try to accelerate that. That's in the sort of more medium short term, and that'll be a bridge to other therapies that will take us 3 to 6 months to develop. And this is a continuous process. There is no beginning and end to each of this. This is, you know, we're pushing this through. Some of them tell us it's taken us years to develop therapies. They're looking at pushing that to the months period of time. And we're trying to provide them the regulatory flexibility, but at the same time, the scientific oversight to make sure that gets done in the best way possible for the American people. The president mentioned that there is a vaccine trial currently being performed. It's a phase one trial, so it's the earliest study that gets done. We expect that to take 12 months to get to completion, to actually a time where we could approve a vaccine. But these are all things to bridge to the prevention part of this with a vaccine. It's exciting work, and the president is right. This is record time for the development of a vaccine, an impressive public-private partnership. The FDA's efforts to facilitate the development of these products are focused on ensuring timely access while also meeting the agency's world-respected gold standard, relying on strong data from clinical trials to determine if an experimental or an off-the-shelf drug that's used for something else can safely and effectively treat patients. We want to assure the American people that FDA is all hands on deck, as the President mentioned, these efforts, and continue to work with interested sponsors to help expedite the work.
Dr. Stephen Hahn is an administrator for the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. Meanwhile, on Wall Street, the market stabilized after major losses yesterday, while the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits jumped by 70,000 last week. Wide swaths of the country are grinding closer to a standstill, from the travel industry to restaurants, as authorities ask Americans to stay home to slow the spread of the virus. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said Thursday the White House's coronavirus stimulus plan could see every American get two $1,000 checks from the government within 9 weeks. The $1 trillion package the White House and Senate Republicans plan on presenting would provide every adult American with a $1,000 check plus another $500 for each child. A family of two with two parents and two children, for example, would get $3,000. Another $300 billion in the bill would be used to help businesses keep people on payroll and offer loan forgiveness for those that do after the crisis ends. A final $200 billion would be devoted to securing lending to airlines and other critical industries hit hard by the pandemic. That led to criticism that Trump would do something Republicans had criticized President Obama for doing in 2008, picking winners and losers in the economy.
We don't want to pick winners and losers. We want everybody to benefit. We want, I think, more than anything else, the workers to benefit. And sometimes for the worker to benefit, you have to go through the company because they have thousands of workers. And if the company goes out of business, no fault of their own, those workers aren't going to be able to receive a check. So we're, look, our ultimate goal are the people. Our ultimate goal are the great people of this country. And we will have things worked out, I think, that are going to be very well. It's a very complex formula. You understand that. Very complex. But it's working out.
The most recent bill would be the third and largest in the government's response to the coronavirus. The first $8.3 billion law focused on health agencies and first responders. The second put roughly $104 billion towards emergency paid leave, free coronavirus testing, and expanding unemployment insurance. And recently over the wire, breaking news, I guess, President Donald Trump said Thursday the government should take partial ownership of companies bailed out in the coronavirus pandemic, a step that would mark an extraordinary federal reach into the private sector, if he was serious. He also held out hope that treatment for COVID-19 might be at hand, voicing far more optimism about quick therapies than federal scientists have expressed. Trump sought to calm the public's fears as the number of confirmed coronavirus cases in the U.S. climbed above 11,000, with at least 168 deaths. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In world news, Iran issued its most dire warning yet Tuesday about the new coronavirus ravaging the country, suggesting millions could die in the Islamic Republic if people keep traveling and ignore health guidance. The death toll in Iran saw another 13% increase Tuesday. The health ministry said the virus had killed 135 more people to raise the total to 988 amid over 16,000 cases. In apparent efforts to try and curb the spread, Iran has released 85,000 prisoners on temporary leave. And Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro on Sunday ordered a collective quarantine in seven states, including the capital, already Caracas, from Monday to stem the spread of the new coronavirus pandemic. Venezuela reported seven new cases of the COVID-19 illness on Sunday, taking its total to 17. One thing that Iran and Venezuela share are heavy United States-imposed economic sanctions that is affecting both nations' ability to fight the pandemic. Mark Weisbrot is an economist with the Economic Policy Research Center.
Are a crime, and a lot of people have noticed that. Even people who, for example, Ben Rhodes, who was one of Obama's top advisors on these issues, and he called it an abomination to have sanctions.
What exactly do sanctions do? What do they mean?
Iran and Venezuela are similar because they're, first of all, they really do target the civilian population. But how do they do that? Well, they cut off oil, a huge part of their oil exports. And so most of the oil exports of Venezuela were lost. It was similar in Iran, a huge collapse of oil exports when they imposed the sanctions originally and when they reimposed them under Trump. So that's the main thing it does. But it also, they have much more than that. They basically make it very hard for the financial sector to get any credit. And so even if you write into the law, you know, that you have exceptions for medicines, it doesn't do any good because the banks won't provide the credit that's necessary to import them. So you have all these essential medicines in Iran. How many of the most important medicines that people need for cancer and for other life-saving medicines have been lost to Iran from the sanctions? But under coronavirus, under this pandemic, it's many times worse than that. It really is a horrible collective punishment. I have to say, Mike Pompeo, our Secretary of State, has admitted that publicly in his statements, that the strategy of sanctions is to increase suffering of people and turn them against the government, cause them to get rid of the government. Here, I'll quote him on CBS News. February last year, he said, "Things are much worse for the Iranian people with the U.S. sanctions, and we are convinced that will lead the Iranian people to rise up." There you have it. And he said something even worse about Venezuela in response to Associated Press reporter's question last year about how, again, the suffering was increasing and that's their actual strategy. It's a crime. You know, under the Geneva Convention and under the Hague Convention, which the United States is a signatory to both, collective punishment is a crime during war. And that's the only loophole they have. So it's an actual war crime. But the loophole they have is because they only apply to killing people like this during a war. But it's kind of obvious, and it's obvious to UN scholars and everyone else, that something that is a crime during war, when people are shooting and killing each other, is a crime when you're doing it in the absence of war.
Mark Weisbrod is an economist with the Center for Economic Policy Research. And conspiracy theories about the source of the coronavirus outbreak have been rife on the web and the halls of Congress. Trump repeatedly, unabashedly calls the disease the Chinese virus because, he says, that's where it comes from. Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton was more direct in pinning the blame on China's military and their biowarfare labs, he says, are in nearby Wuhan, the city where the outbreak began.
We also know that just a few miles away from that food market is China's only biosafety level 4 super laboratory that researches human infectious diseases. Now, we don't have evidence that this disease originated there, but because of China's duplicity and dishonesty from the beginning, we need to at least ask the question to see what the evidence says. And China right now is not giving any evidence on that question at all.
So this super lab that you refer to, this super lab is the only one of its kind in this area, in Wuhan, in the province, that area. And what do they do with this super lab?
It's unclear, Maria. We have such laboratories ourselves in the United States run by our military, in large part done for preventative purposes or trying to discover vaccines or to protect our own soldiers. China is obviously very secretive about what happens at the Wuhan laboratory. We don't know, again, where this virus originated. That's why it's so important that we at least ask the questions and get the evidence. But China continues to block our ability to ask those questions and get that evidence.
And an editor for the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists is Matthew Field. In a recent article, he writes that while the coronavirus is not engineered, it could have been released by accident, but there's no evidence for that scenario at this time.
There's just conspiracy theories just flying all over the place. It seems like the experts are saying there's no chance that this could be a bioweapon. There was just a letter in Nature Medicine, I think it was yesterday or the day before. They don't see any laboratory-based scenario to how this virus could have evolved. The experts pretty much uniformly rule out the possibility that this could have been a bioweapon. I do think there is some debate among the expert community about whether this could be some sort of lab accident.
What's the basis of the idea that it could be a lab accident? Why? What was any evidence? I mean, there was allegedly in Wuhan, China, there's some sort of bio laboratory that the Chinese were using. But, you know, there's also one in New York, in Plum Island. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason it could be a lab accident, or you can't rule it out quite yet, is because labs aren't perfectly safe. They're even in the Nature Medicine article where they discuss how it couldn't be a laboratory-based scenario, they acknowledge that there had been cases where SARS got out or there were mishaps with SARS, the previous coronavirus that caused so much trouble in the early 2000s. Labs aren't airtight. It's important to look into whether there could have been some sort of inadvertent release. And I think that's something that folks are discussing in the expert community. It's something that I'm still sort of looking into myself. So I don't want to say that that's what happened. And I'm at the same time not going to completely shut the door on the possibility.
What about these theories? You had Tom Cotton came out and just blamed it on China. Is he relating to what you're saying? Should we take Tom Cotton at his word that he possibly could be right or maybe could be wrong? Or is that just Trump propaganda?
Tom Cotton, he was blasted when he appeared to be suggesting that it was a bioweapon. I think there was an interview last month, middle of last month, on Fox News where that suggestion was sort of made. He then put out a series of tweets laying out the hypotheses that he had for what this could be. And one of those was the bioweapon theory, that this was a bioweapon. And one of those was the naturally occurring, you know, this was something that just happened in nature. And he thought that this might be the most likely scenario. But he wasn't shutting the door on either the bioweapon idea or the lab's idea. So in the absence of real compelling evidence, I think that he would have been wise to hold back on making any sort of assertion about particularly that it could be a bioweapon, because that's such a charged term.
Trump has been saying this is a Chinese virus from the beginning, and he just said it the other day, and he was accused of being a racist by a reporter. Do you think that reporter was out of bounds by accusing him of being a racist? It might be true.
Absolutely not. The reporter was totally within bounds. This the idea of calling it a Chinese virus, there have been safety issues at labs in the United States as well. So even if this was something that got out of a lab, which we're still obviously looking into, blaming this on identifying this with an ethnicity, with a group of people is just incredibly dangerous in my view, because it stigmatizes everyone walking around in the United States who might look Chinese, my wife included, who is from Thailand. It's absolutely irresponsible in my view.
What do I tell people who are primed to believe that the upper classes have it out for them?
When you see all these movie stars saying they got the test and with the same time we're hearing reports about how difficult it is to get the test, you wonder what's their secret. And it's probably wealth and connections and access. And so when a vaccine comes out, when countermeasures, medical countermeasures are released, we want it to be all distributed in an equitable way. You know, I can understand that in this scary time, people start believing in conspiracy theories and start trying to find some answer for why they see things as being handled in an inequitable way. But I would say that as much as possible, I don't know how to deal with that. As much as possible, the news media and officials should stick to the truth and try to convey accurate information. So it's probably all you can do to try to tamp down on some of these theories.
And Matthew Field is an editor for the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. Another article in this edition of the Bulletin is by Elizabeth Eves, and it's called Hot Zone in the Heartland. As the United States struggles with the coronavirus pandemic, a years-long debate over the new national bio and agro defense facility to be located in the middle of Kansas cattle country near Manhattan, Kansas, raises worrying questions about the safety of American biodefense laboratories. We spoke with Elizabeth Eves earlier today.
It's important to separate fact from fiction. Where the new coronavirus came from is bats, in fact, that came from animals. And that we know pretty well. There's pretty much no debate over that.
How do you know that?
There is a pretty strong scientific consensus that this is a new zoonotic disease. And a zoonotic disease is one that can jump from animals to humans. Scientists are pretty sure that this one came originally from bats, although there could have been an intermediate species. And one of the reasons this happens is that we humans are spending more and more time and taking up more and more space in animal habitats. So if you have a area that gets deforested, say, for agricultural purposes or for suburbanization, suddenly we, the humans, are in the spaces where the animals are, and we are more likely to catch viruses or a mutated version of a virus that has been circulating harmlessly in a animal population because it doesn't harm those animals. It mutates and jumps to humans. Mm-hmm. So that all said, high containment laboratories, which are the subject of my new piece, they research zoonotic disease, these diseases that come from animals and move to humans. And high containment labs specifically research ones that may not have any vaccine or cure. So we call these BSL-3 or BSL-4 labs. Now, there's been a proliferation of these labs in the United States, particularly over the last 20 years. And these labs do have accidents. There's a clear track record of safety mishaps, accidents, and even insider threats. So there is a history of accidents or mishaps or negative intentions coming from inside labs and causing outbreaks.
Let's go into the whole reason why the United States has all these high security labs, something out of the Andromeda strain, where they had the underground 5-level laboratory with the nuclear self-destruct bomb on the bottom. Is that what we're talking about here?
I don't know if they go. There's any that go 5 levels underground and have a self-destruct button. However, so-called BSL-3 and BSL-4, that stands for biosafety level, 3 and 4 labs, they are extremely high security. And to go in and out of a BSL-4 lab, you need to completely suit up, take off all your street clothes, put on a full bodysuit, headgear, multiple layers of rubber gloves, there's a very strict protocol for going in and out of these labs. Historically, actually, a lot of them have been on islands. And as you know, my story touches on the Plum Island Animal Disease Laboratory, which isn't too far from you. It's off of Long Island, off the North Fork of Long Island. So there's been this animal disease research BSL-3 lab there since the 1950s. And one reason people have put disease research labs on islands is because that provides, in some ways, a higher level of security. It's harder for a pathogen, which a pathogen just means a thing that causes disease, a microbe, harder for a microbe to escape and get out and infect either animals or people.
From that lab, do you think there's ever been anything released? But from other labs, definitely there have been, mostly like hoof and mouth disease, I think your article mentions, and things like that.
Plum Island researches foot and mouth. That's a big one. If we had a foot and mouth outbreak in the mainland, it would literally destroy the beef industry, which is like a $68 billion a year industry. So in 2007 or 8, the Perbright Institute, which is a very prestigious and well-renowned disease research institute in Britain, they had a leak and foot and mouth got out and infected a bunch of cattle. These things do happen. And that's one reason. So part of what my story is about is Plum Island is actually closing and its operations are moving to a brand new lab, a kind of bigger, even fancier one that's in the middle of Kansas. One reason this was controversial is that people fear that if you had a foot and mouth escape in the middle of Kansas, you would destroy the beef industry.
Why would they have foot and mouth disease in a laboratory? Why do they need to make it if it's dangerous?
To research it and understand it. So we do need some high containment laboratories because we do need to research, understand, find cures and vaccines for human and animal diseases.
Why so many though? They've built, well, as you said, so many.
Yeah, that is an excellent question. And there hasn't been any central planning or oversight to their growth in the United States. So in the 90s, before 1990, there were only two BSL-4 labs in the United States. Then there were a few more were added in the 90s, but then there's been a huge growth since 2001 because when that anthrax scare happened, many people believed this was a foreign terrorist attack, and now we need really good biodefense. And spending on biodefense grew hugely. Department of Homeland Security was created. It took over Plum Island, which had belonged to USDA. So the number of labs started growing just willy-nilly. And now there are probably at least 276 BSL-3 and 4 labs, so the two highest containment levels. But nobody actually even knows for sure because it's not tracked by one central authority. And this is an issue because even though we do need some of these labs, there's no one saying, well, how many do we need? And each one, every time you build a new one, even if it's a well-run lab, there's some risk.
One of these labs is $1.5 billion.
The new one being built in Kansas is, I think, projected to cost $1.25 billion, and that's one single laboratory.
Are these used for defense or for military?
So that's a really interesting question because officially the U.S. does not do offensive bioweapons research. We, and like many other countries, are party to the Biological Weapons Convention, have been since I think the late 60s. So sort of like nuclear chemical weapons, like most countries have agreed, okay, we're not going to do this stuff. We're not going to create or stockpile offensive biological weapons. However, what is the difference between a defensive and an offensive weapon? Something that you're researching for defensive purposes because you say you fear that another country could introduce a microbe or dangerous biological weapon into our community could also be used for offensive purposes. So officially, there's no offensive biological weapons program. All this research we're doing is for defensive purposes, but it's a fuzzy line as to what's offensive and what's defensive.
And are these unsafe?
Every high containment laboratory, even the most well-run ones, pose some risk. We do need these laboratories They make us safer by advancing our understanding of disease. However, each lab also poses at least a little bit of risk, as a history of lab accidents and breaches demonstrates.
And Elizabeth Eves is the author of Hot Zone in the Heartland. It's in the recent edition of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, and it's about the U.S. struggle with the coronavirus and its long-ago debate over the years-long debate over the new National Bio and Agro Defense Facility to be located in Kansas.
I've been treated for mild depression, and I've been treated for growing pains. I've been treated for hallucinations, and I can see it all coming again. But you can wind me up, yeah, you can slow me down. You can dig a little, yeah, you can mess me around. But there's one thing I should tell you, you must agree. There's no use you playing doctor to my disease.
And we will promise not to play doctor to your disease. Welcome to WBAI. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Reggie Johnson is at the controls, and we're here to take your calls. We do that occasionally on the WBAI news. Of course, the subject is going to be coronavirus, and it's going to be all the issues we brought up in the news. Any questions or comments you might have, our number is 212-209-2877. Usually I've steered clear as we try to navigate the realities of this terrible, terrible scourge that's upon us. I, at the same time, want to now maybe broach that area. It's called the conspiracy theory. And so I've discouraged those kind of comments in the past, but I won't this time. I'll let you guys throw it at me. We'll see what sticks on the wall. All right, our number, 212-209-2877. Of course, that's not the only thing to ask about, right? But I know it's on the tip of people's tongues out there. You know, I've been out there listening to people as much as I can with all the social distancing going on. And, of course, we wanted you folks out there to tell us how social distancing has been affecting your lives as well. And you are on the radio. Welcome to WBAI.
Hey, this is JJ calling deep from the heart of Brooklyn.
All right. So comment or question?
Sure. I'll just do comment. I would just say thank gosh for WBAI to get us through this, because everyone is just so confused right now. And as far as social distancing, I'm just distancing myself from all the monkey business out there and staying as close to WBAI as possible. And especially, if I'd also like to remind viewer listeners, yesterday on Bonnie Faulkner's show, Guns and Butter, she had a really good guest on who really cut through.
Second time I've heard that. In the last day, I have to go. I'm going to go. We have an archives page. If you go to WBAI.org, I just want to use this opportunity to tell people you can find archives on the left side of the page. Click on that, and you can see you listen to any program that you might have missed. Just go scroll through. It's there.
Yeah, so Guns and Butter from yesterday. And you guys just keep doing what you're doing, because otherwise, I don't think any of us are going to make it through this mess. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll do well. You make it happen. Thank you. And you're on the radio. Welcome to WBAI.
I wanted to let people in our listening area know about something that's been going on in the attempt to keep healthcare workers safe. I was being turned away from seeing the doctor because I had a slight cough from a cold.
Really?
And when I persisted and the doctor finally was told and agreed to see me with a mask on my face, I was told that the doctors at my doctor's office are no longer touching patients. I got a corticosteroid shot a week ago, and if it had been a week later, I wouldn't have been able to get it for my arthritis, because doctors aren't touching patients.
All right. I had no idea of that. That's a new development. And let me put this out to the listeners. Has anybody out there had an experience similar to what this caller is telling us about? Because this is something new for me. So thank you very much, caller, for that, keeping us informed. You're on the net. You're next one. You're on the radio. Go ahead. I can't hear you. Your phone must be going dead.
How is this?
Terrible. It's not working. I'm sorry. We're going to have to go. We're going to try again. Try a different phone. The battery is dying. That's usually what happens. You're on the radio.
Hi. Good afternoon. Good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a resident of the Bronx, and I just wanted to say some of the things that I've been hearing today. I know it's not your program, but I was listening to Democracy Now! This morning, and from the minute the show started, I was just, like, totally appalled. I mean, here it is. You know, if this thing exists any place in the world, it's a problem for all of us. And we got these people. Pompeo is up there talking about doubling down on sanctions. It's almost as if he's trying to take advantage of what's a problem for everybody all around the world.
As you heard from our earlier on when we had Mike Weiss brought on, he was reading quotes.
I was listening to that, too.
I played those quotes. Ridiculous. I think I played them myself, actually, in previous news when they were first said. And it always shocked me that he was so – but maybe it shouldn't in this age of Trump that they're so –
Not at
there.
All. Yeah. You know, it's getting to the point now where I don't even – you know, before I used to think it was just moronic and stupid. Now I just think it's a combination of – being stupid, being moronic, and just being evil and just greedy. And you know, on top of that, if I could just say one other thing about locally, I've been listening in the evenings as well, too. And I think it was Bob Ganji the other night was talking about them trying to do things to, like, limit the amount of people in the prisons and stuff. Never mind that. You got the mayor and the governor telling people to stock up on at least 2 weeks' worth of groceries. I'm here in the Bronx on E.L. Grant. Just across the street from a supermarket, a Jumbo Extra. There's no place to park. People are double parked, and it's not even like it's a small one-way street. It's a double, you know, double on each side. You got two lanes.
It's a boulevard, a big boulevard.
Yeah, and these people are double parked, trying to run in there and get their groceries so they could get out. So they're not even blocking the street. They're kind of like in that little hazard area that they put alongside the road. And, you know, the other night I see traffic cops walking up and down and, like, trying to take advantage of them and put tickets on them. Like, I mean,
that's interesting,
like,
you say
what's
that.
What's going on with people?
Well, the mayor, that we said that yesterday in the news story about it, that everybody's saying the mayor has been telling the police to keep enforcing the law exactly as you
and not even that. I was actually online this afternoon during my lunch hour, and Commissioner McShay is actually congratulating the traffic cops and telling them they're doing a great job. I literally walked over to them the other night and was like, are you serious? What are you doing? People are
careful.
In there trying to get groceries. Like, you know, I mean, you got to have a heart, man. Like, even these people that are doing it, don't they, like, aren't they living around here too and seeing? Or never mind if they live here in my community. I'm sure they live places, too, where they're just as, you know, challenged with everything that's going on these days as everybody else. Some of the stuff that you're hearing from people is, like, absolutely crazy. And, I mean...
Like what kind of things?
Well, like I just said, like, you know, what you're hearing from Pompeo saying that he's doubling
that
down
kind of
on
thing,
sanctions.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know,
using this as a war, you know, using this to drift even closer to war rather than he's usually more interested in that aspect of it than in actually trying
to. They literally are telling you that they're seeing mass grave sites from space in Iran. You already are doing things to make it so they could barely live before this all started.
Right.
And now, I mean, like I said, if it exists any place in the world, it's a problem for everybody.
There you go. Thank you very much, caller. We're going to go on because so many people are calling in right now. You're on the radio. Welcome to WBAI. Hello. By the way, our number. Are you with us?
Are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Oh, okay. Yes, Janine, how are you?
Hi, Janine.
They closed the schools. We spoke last Saturday. Okay. I'm complaining about my co-op. I have Jeannie Hopper on. My food co-op, which I found should be more cooperative. I had people laughing at me shopping with a my scarf around my mouth or a mask.
So you feel that the things that you're doing to protect yourself are just serious about it.
Right. And when I had to turn around and say, please, we're supposed to be 6 feet away from one another, looking and laughing and I think it's the young. I don't know.
They've shown that a very large percentage of the people who are going into the hospital are between the mid 20s and mid 40s. That this disease, it turns out, has
daughters.
It tends to be more fatal with older people.
Yeah. Well, one of my daughters works in the hospital for New York special surgery. She's a pharmacist. And then the school teacher, she's been home. But anyway, I'm working on the computer for school. But that's not what I call her. But what I'm saying is, so rude. You know, just so rude.
What's your advice for people? We have to go on to the next call. You have so many callers.
My advice is keep your distance. Let's be friendly. Smile. Wave. We can't touch, you know. And don't laugh at the people who, you know, my husband's 66 years old soon. I'm 59.
I understand it. I get it. You don't want to get it. Very good. Thank you very much, caller. And the next person, you're on the line. Welcome to WBAI. Hello.
Hey, is that me?
Hey, yeah, we can hear you. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
Great. Question or comment about the news?
A little bit of both. I'm 65 years old, and I believe in science, right? I grew up in Brooklyn my whole life. And when you understand science, there are three words since 2016 that I never knew the value of what that meant. And those three words became ignorance is bliss. If people want to remain stupid, they don't see what's going around.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that occurred on November 8, 2016. Mm-hmm. And from then on, we are paying the price. Because if you're a human being, and you don't desire to get knowledge, pure knowledge of anything or the people underneath you, then you are not a leader. And that's why I fear. I'm in my home.
Yeah.
I'm trying my best. You know, I was going to the gym every day. I'm bike cycling. But I realized that at the top, where science is science, and what goes up must come down, is nature, is gravity, is things that could happen, and it's the things that are not happening. Remember, I'm 65 years old, so.
Yeah. We're talking about truth here, that there's truth out there, and people don't want to see the truth. They want to just live fantasy land.
Because they're based on a premise that they were right about something, and there are three things that get remembered. Where were you when Kennedy died? I know where I was.
Mm-hmm.
What was wrong with you with 9/11?
Mm-hmm.
The third one, and that's going to be the kicker, because that's the one that's based on a lie. Did you vote for Trump or not?
Very good. Thank you. We have to go on to the next caller. Good point there. And you're on the radio. Welcome to WBAI.
Hey, how you doing today?
All right, great. You have to speak up louder.
Oh, how you doing today? Love the show? I'm actually on the app. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Cool. I just want to say two things real quick. I just want to say the response in the U.S., from a business standpoint, you know, the response in the U.S. is very slow. Basically, I think because, that's not an incentive. There's more of an incentive to slow the process up. You know, when the vaccine comes out, I don't know whether it'll be free or not. You know, it's money involved. So why would they do things like China did real quickly?
Uh-huh. You're saying that on the business side, they're not responding. They're taking forever. He's not really using the powers.
Yeah, it's kind of obvious. It's like people just sitting back at home, I guess, at work, just sitting around watching like, oh, well, it's another day gone. No test.
Right. Well, you know, there people are invoking Herbert Hoover, very interesting person in American history.
I hate to say that, but that seems what is going on. I'm a New Yorker also, so I'm a little concerned. The last thing I want to say, the guy called in earlier about Dr. Francis Boyle.
He was
on Guns and Butter.
Yes.
And he's 3 PhDs from Harvard. He's actually drafted the Bioweapons Act. And
right.
The United Nations actually picked it up to regulate it.
I know. 3,000. Me and him, though, me and him had some words earlier today. I'm trying to get him on. I'm going to be nice to him. I'll try and apologize. Thank you very much. At first I didn't believe his theory, but now I've changed my mind. All right. So it happens. All right. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on WBAI.
Hi. I'm very confused. I listened to the Bonnie Faulkner show, Guns and Butter, and I really highly recommend you listen to that because there was a gentleman on there that has a organization, I forgot, it's called Global Something. He was explaining how in October of 2019, the World Health Organization did a simulation of exactly what we're dealing with now. When they went to go, and then in December, they had a ready plan to create a vaccine for this disease before it even happened. And then on January 30th, they declared it a major outbreak and pandemic with only 150 people infected outside of China, which does not categorize as a pandemic. So I'm just really confused because I don't understand how that can happen and nobody's drawing that together. I understand that now it's actually a virus that people are really getting, but I think it's important that we see its inception. And I know for myself, I'm an anti-vaxxer, and the CDC did a whole lot of lies about the connection between vaccines and sickness, autism, and other diseases. And it's really hard to trust the people that are telling us to do these things. So I'm just in a really confused state. I just was wondering if there are other people that, you know, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist. I just want to know facts and the truth. And it's so confusing and so frustrating. And I'm wondering if there's any parallel between Bernie Sanders, who was the first presidential candidate in a long time, who would really make some serious fundamental changes to our society, and the way that the disease has come out and how they've gotten bought everybody off.
We'll look into that. Thank you very much, caller. We have a couple more calls we want to take. By the way, you're listening to WBAI. I'm Paul DiRienzo. This is our extended news, and our number is 212-209-2877, and you're on the radio.
Is that me?
Yes, that's you. Welcome.
Oh, great. Okay. I love what that your last caller was saying. Right on. Now, the thing that's getting me is all of these corporations asking for help. We've got the airlines. You've got the museums. You've got all these people who are billionaires asking for money. And then what's going to happen to all of us? I am a street performer, so I don't pay taxes. I'm not on some payroll. I am totally self-funded, you know, by the people. And we're the ones, all of the artists, my whole art community, we're going to be suffering through this.
Good point. I was thinking
really
that too. For folks who don't have, who get their paycheck as independent contractors, what do they do? How do they prove that they're due anything and what they should be getting? I don't understand it either. We'll have to wait and see on that one. There's a lot of problems
Paul,
there.
Hey, Paul, if you don't mind, I can share a little bit of information about dealing with artists as well, because there is an organization called the New York City Artists Coalition, and they're doing a special if you go to their website right now to nycartc.com/COVID-19, they're talking about this right now about how to help independent artists. So I just wanted to share that information.
Very good. People, we're going to have to do it ourselves.
Yes.
I don't think.
Yes.
I don't expect to see a penny of this stuff that they're talking about. I don't, you know, the day that happens, I'll be surprised. I never expect to see a penny of that kind of money. It's always disappears this way or that way when you try to get it from the government. But that's just my personal point of view. So we got a couple minutes. You're on the radio. Go ahead, caller.
How you doing, Mr. Lorenzo?
How you doing? Comment or question? How you doing? What part of the city are you in right now?
I reside in the Bronx, but yesterday I was working in Westchester County around Hartsdale. So, you know, they have the 20 bus that goes from Bedford Park all the way to White Plains. And that bus is very busy, man. But there was not too many people riding on Beeline yesterday. Cross County was closed, man. Cross County Mall.
The mall.
In the whole city, yeah.
Right, one of the family that had the tragedy where the matriarch died and the two children died. It was in the paper today. I believe that they say the source might have been somebody who was working at the racetrack.
Are you serious? Oh my goodness!
That's what it said in the paper. I don't know. We'll have to look into it.
I noticed that there's still a lot of
tragedies happening. People don't realize it, but people are dying of this.
And people are not like I'm on the bus and people are, like on their phones. And holding the handlebars, like, you know, I don't know what's wrong with people. have, and like Gary, like, you know, I listen to Gary Noe. Uh-huh. Have, get a spray bottle, put some alcohol in there.
And spray away. Yeah. I know Gary well.
People,
yes.
People are not, they're not taking heed of nothing, man.
Uh-huh. He's got a point. I used to think it was a little weird, but now I'm getting my spray bottle.
Yeah,
I'm filling it up.
I mean, they're not taking it seriously.
I'm taking it seriously now, boy. All right. Thank you very much, Claude. We don't have a lot of time, so we're going to go on another call. Very interesting. Listen to Gary Noe. He was right in the end. And you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Yes, besides Gary, let's listen to Bonnie Faulkner's
You're the third person to mention that. Yeah, that's, you're the third person
and
fourth
person.
That's
the best thing I've heard. Professor Chertofsky goes into the fact that the World Health Organization has meetings every month, October, November, December. This was discussed. And we had Davos and, what is it? Our stupid Wall Street people knew all about this. And little Donnie Johnny has to drag his tootsies because he's going to make it work for him in the elections. It is just outright disgusting. And it's time for America to wake up and listen to WBAI and send money now.
It sounds good to me.
We're going to protect you better than any wipes or, sanitary things you wipe your doorknobs with. America's brains left us a long time ago, and God bless you for being there.
Thank you very much. All right. That's it. Well, we have a whole board full of calls, but thank you for calling, and tune into the news every evening at 6 p.m., and you can check us out on SoundCloud and on our WBAI.org. You can go back into our archives and hear past programs like this famous Bonnie Faulkner program I have to go listen to now. And keep supporting WBAI. I'm Paul DiRienzo. And I don't know, this is some of the news for Thursday, March 19th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
I've been treated for growing pains. I've been treated for hallucinations, and I can see it all coming again. But you can wind me up, yeah, you can slow me down, you can dig a little.